Shalom, this is Gamliel Shmalo. Bamidbar chapter 7 is a master class in three acts exploring the tension between individual creativity and focused conformity in our religious experience. In the first act, we are shown Moses as the paradigmatic, submissive servant of God. Verse 1 begins, quote, "On the day that Moses finished setting up the tabernacle, he anointed and consecrated it and all its furnishings." Rashi is struck by this phrase, Moses finished setting up the tabernacle? But we know that Bezalel and Oliav and all the Chachmei Lev, the wise-hearted people, made the tabernacle. Rashi answers based on the Midrash, Scripture attributes the entire construction to Moses, lefi shemasar nafsho alav, because he sacrificed himself over the construction. What was the nature of Moses' dedication? Rashi continues, to see that the shape of each article was exactly as God showed him on the mountain, to show the workmen how it should be made, and Moses did not err in a single shape. The greatness of Moses, it seems from this verse, is that Moses was able to make himself a perfectly transparent vehicle for the expression of the divine plan into the world. The humblest of men, he made sure not to cloud the divine message by filtering it through his own personality. His act of sacrifice was self-sacrifice, allowing the perfect spectrum of the pure white light to shine through him, without being tinted by his own preconceived notions. Ironically, by taking himself out of the message, the completion of the tabernacle is attributed to him alone, as we read, on the day Moses finished setting up the tabernacle. That is Act 1. In Act 2, the 12 princes of the tribes of Israel bring an offering of wagons to carry the tabernacle from place to place. According to the Or HaChaim, Moses freezes, perplexed. Wagons? We haven't been commanded to have wagons. What am I supposed to do with wagons? At that point, in verse 5, God intervenes and tells Moses, Kach mitam, take it from them. It seems that Moses, the humble servant, is perplexed by the prince's religious creativity. Moses is used to taking divine commands, and is therefore reluctant to take creative initiative. In this act, too, God appreciates the prince's creativity and tells Moses, they are correct, take the wagons for use in the service of the temple. In Act 1, Moses is paid the highest compliment for his dedication to the purity of the divine vision. In Act 2, the creativity and initiative of the princes is validated and incorporated. And we, caught between these two seemingly conflicting messages, must find some way to bring them both into our religious experience. There may be many ways to find meaning here. Personally, I look at the object of these two acts. Moses is involved with the essence of the religious service itself, the transmitted form of the holy vessels and the temple architecture. In such matters, the most important thing we can do is to try to become as humble as possible, unbiased and unprejudiced, trying to hear the subtle voice of the divine without imposing too much of ourselves. In my conception, this is analogous to the Torah scholar rigorously laboring to understand the law, the halacha, as accurately as possible, consciously avoiding tipping the scales of judgment by incorporating some bias or agenda. But religious life, indeed, even the performance of mitzvot, is far broader than just a dedication to the law. There's a huge network that must support and transport and bring that law to life in the world. The wagons represent the web of actions and relationships that are necessary to practically move the temple from place to place. These actions and relationships are dependent on social and historical context. In a desert, you need wagons. In Jerusalem, the temple is permanent and no longer needs wagons. Such contingent details cannot be exhaustively commanded, and therefore we are called upon to enlist our creativity. Examples for us would be the aesthetics of the synagogues, beyond what can be derived from the legal codes, the flavors of our Sabbath meals, beyond the laws of kashrut, the governance of our charitable institutions and schools. In these matters, we encourage our laity to become excited and creative, and in these matters, we can say to our religious leaders, without hesitation or reservation, Kach mitam, take it from them, and let them be used in the service of God. But as I mentioned, our chapter has a third act as well. These same princes, who showed such creativity with the wagons, then show remarkable conformity when they bring their sacrificial offerings for the dedication of the Mizbeach, the altar. Every day, a different prince, every day, exactly the same sacrifice. The commentaries wonder aloud, why do the details of the offering need to be repeated over and over again? Can't we just say what was offered once, and that the very same offering was brought each day? The third act of this chapter teaches that there is another form of creativity as well. Even as we may appear to conform on the outside, each of us is invited to bring his or her own creative interpretations, insights, and emotions to our religious life. Even when our offerings look the same, you and I have different backgrounds and personalities. It may appear that we are both offering bulls and lambs, but ultimately, if our religious life is to be sincere and authentic, I can only offer myself, and you can only offer yourself. May all our offerings be accepted with love.